Call this meeting to order. This is the regular session of the mayor and council of the city of Bisbee County of Cochise and state of Arizona to be held on Tuesday, April 17th, 2018 at 7 p.m. in the Cochise County Board of Supervisors Hearing Room, 1415 Melody Lane, Building G, Bisbee, Arizona. Ms. Coronado, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Anna Klein, here. Councilmember Joan Hanson is excused. Councilmember Frank Davis.
Here.
Mayor David M. Smith.
Here.
Councilmember Bill Higgins.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Douglas Dunn.
Here.
Councilmember Gabe Lindstrom.
Here.
City staff Robert Smith, city manager Ashley Coronado, city clerk Carrie Bagley, finance director George Pestio, fire chief Britt Hanson, city attorney.
Thank you, ma'am. For our moment of silence tonight, I'd like to acknowledge and give our very best thoughts to Councilwoman Hanson, who, as of a couple hours ago, underwent knee replacement surgery, and that we experienced a loss today of Barbara Bush. And so if we just, a lady that did a lot for the United States, and if we just take a minute and for a moment of silence for them, please. Thank you. Would you please stand and join me in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please sit. Welcome, everybody. This is going to be a busy week, has been a busy couple weeks, and thank you for being there. And we have, I believe, one call to the public, and that would be Ms. Schmidt. Where are you? Welcome, Ms. Schmidt.
Okay, so
just speak into the mic.
I'm really nervous.
Now, you don't need to be. Just speak into the mic, please.
Okay. I'm going to do the best that I can to get through this because it's pretty emotional for me. And so, at the beginning, I'd like to apologize for not bringing this to the attention of everyone sooner. And the only thing I know to do now is to tell the truth and protect the community that I live in and the people who live here. So, my name is Jennifer Schmidt. I live in Bisbee. I've worked for the Bisbee Tour Company for over a year now. I've worked there since David Russell, the current owner, bought the tour company. And my concerns for the community are that the golf carts are not safe. I know what I'm expressing to you is my experience as an employee there. There have been several incidents, but on Sunday I was giving a tour and I could not stop and we were almost in an accident, and I'm talking just a couple of inches. It was either the ambulance or the fire truck coming down Tombstone Canyon, and I had a five-year-old boy sitting behind me. I've expressed to David numerous times my concerns with the brakes. Yesterday, I made several formal complaints to ADOT, and today, when I was at work, I gave a couple of tours on a cart that has a hydraulic brake system put in it, and those brakes function far better than the ones that don't. When I got back from that tour, I was told to switch carts to the newer blue one that has the hula girl on it, and to give a tour at 2 o'clock. When we had just gotten off the last tour, the girl that was driving that cart, she told me she could not stop coming down off High Road and didn't come to a stop until she got past the high school. This was after it was already told to him numerous times that those brakes don't work well. So today, when I was told to switch carts and drive that cart that just malfunctioned again, I told him, no, I'm not going to do it. And he said, you're refusing to do your job? I said, no, I'm refusing to do something that is not safe. And I left. There haven't been seatbelts on at many, for up until just a couple of days ago. I've been told by David Russell to drive without the seatbelts. If I get a ticket, then he'll pay for it. And I said, but then it's on my record and my auto insurance. Yeah. So there's carts that don't have a horn. There's no horn. There's no backup beeper for reverse. And it's very bad. So all I can do now is tell you the truth, tell you what's going on. And it's not if, it's when someone gets hurt. And it's just a matter of time.
Thank you, ma'am. I very much appreciate you bringing that forward to us. Thank you.
Anybody have any questions before I sit down?
I don't believe. Thank you. Mr. Smith?
Yes, sir.
May I suggest or may I request that tomorrow any cart that's on the street gets safety checked?
Yes, sir.
By our police department, that they specifically look for carts on the street and safety check them?
Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
Accounts payable.
I move that we pay accounts payable in the amount of $112,615.83.
Mm-hmm. I second that.
Thank you. We have a motion and we have a second to pay accounts payable. All those in favor, signify by saying.
I have a question.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Please.
So it looks like, I'm just curious about the office supplies and Bank of America now. It's showing a lot of the stuff for office supplies is now under Bank of America. As far as April.
Is under or is not? I can't understand.
Is. So okay. Everything under office supplies now looks like it's under Bank of America.
Uh-huh.
I'm just wondering why the change, how that works.
I would assume they bought it on the B of A card.
Yeah, but it's office supply stuff that was normally listed where we got it from.
Ms. Bagley, thank you.
Do you know which in particular? Because we still have Office Depot on here, but sometimes if it's somewhere other than Office Depot where we don't have an account, then it's purchased with a Bank of America card.
Do we know where?
Do you have one in particular?
Well, I mean, just looking here, it says keys, chairs on page 4.
Okay.
And then scanners, thumb driver, those 3 in a row, it says Bank of America.
There was a, keys were purchased on the Bank of America from Cochise Lock and Safe with a Bank of America card. And Staples in Sierra Vista was purchased with a Bank of America card.
So it was a Staples one? So I'm just wondering if, I mean, I know it's like beating a dead horse, but if we've reached out to any of the busy office supply, you know, dollar stores, you know, anything like that.
I'm sure Ms. Bagley hasn't. That's something to take up with the city manager.
Okay.
Mr. Smith, do you have an answer right now?
I can offer some information. The current procurement code that the council has provided for staff to follow provides for staff to purchase from any vendor who has a state contract. and the companies, by and large, that we purchase from have state contracts. Because we don't have to go through comparative exercises and filtering to see where the lowest prices are. The assumption within that code that council has provided us is that if a company has gotten a state contract, they are providing the lowest cost possible, at least for that year in which they have a contract with the state. And so, according to the code that we follow, that council has given us, we are using state contract companies to purchase from. It expedites purchasing for us. Now, could we go to local businesses? The way we would approach local businesses is to create a request for proposals and advertise that to all businesses, because the existing procurement code requires us to treat all vendors with the same level of scrutiny and competition. So we aren't allowed by the current code to go to a specific business in the city of Bisbee and try and give them business. We are required by the code to obtain the lowest price possible and to treat all companies with the same fairness. So I've talked to Ashley about creating an RFP. We are working on getting a subset of office materials that we could store on site. Storage here is limited. We are planning on going out to the entire office supply sector, and in particular mailing hard copies to businesses in Bisbee, Douglas, and Sierra Vista. But I am not able to go to a specific business in Bisbee and try to feed them business. I don't know who owns that company. I don't know who they're related to. They might be a nephew of a council member. There are issues that I have to follow state law. And that's the reason why the procurement policy is built the way it is. Now, if council wants us to encourage local purchases and support of the Local First program, I believe there are things that can be done with the code that would give us a little wiggle room. Britt was telling me the council has plus or minus 3% on cost with some things. There are changes that we could bring to the procurement code that would empower staff to do that. But that's something that I need to take to the council, and the council needs to decide as a body that that's the policy they want the city to adopt. So I'm a little stuck.
You're saying we couldn't have went?
In the mic, please.
You're saying we couldn't have went to Office Supply and said, you know, here's what we need, here's our proposal, give us your proposal.
We could have done that if we had gone to all businesses that provide that and if we had noticed it.
So why haven't we done that yet?
We're working.
I think we've been talking about this for, a long time now.
Well, as from staff's perspective, what we're hearing from one or two council members is we want you to buy from this store in Bisbee.
I've never said we want you to buy. I said we should give all of our local businesses a chance.
And we have.
How many office supply companies do we have? I mean, we have the dollar stores and we have an office supply.
It's
a matter of going to maybe three places and doing it.
We have given them a chance, but we cannot go to that business and
how
say,
given them a chance?
Please take...
Let's don't interrupt. Let's hear it.
You're interrupting me right now.
Say this. If you want staff to behave in a different manner when it comes to purchasing office supplies, you need to change the current policy, because the current policy tells staff to do it in a manner that is different than what you want. And if the rest of the council votes on policy to steer us in that direction, then we'll follow the policy.
But how have we given them a chance so far?
I believe we've published RFPs in the past, and we're using state contracts. So if Bisbee Office Supply wants to compete for and be approved for a state contract, they too could be a direct source that we go to. But we've not seen Bisbee Office Supply operating to try and secure more business. We haven't heard anything from them. We've heard from you, we've heard from council members, but we haven't heard anything from Bisbee Office Supply. I would be glad to sit down and show them how to compete on an RFP and respond to the state contracting requirements. We're happy to do that. But I can't go there and say, here, take my check.
I never said to do that. and give them a chance. That's all I've ever said is let's at least talk to them. We haven't even talked to them, any of them. I just bring it up because we're stressing the local and by local, but we haven't even talked to some of the stuff that we can do.
If council wants to make it okay for me to go meet with single individual Bisbee businesses and talk to them about giving them city business, I'm happy to do that. Right now, that is not part of the scope of the code.
Anything else? Ms. Klein?
On page one, we have luncheon supplies, but it's under fire replacement expense. Why is it under fire replacement?
I know that in our kitchen at City Hall, we had all kinds of serving trays, bowls, utensils, things like that for when we had large meetings. So I would imagine it would be to replace those items.
Okay. And then on page, let's see, five, there is, it's 10-64-24050, and it says IV practice arm. I'm assuming that's a practice arm for IV practice. Is that a typo, or am I just not getting it?
I could go out, you know, George. It's in the fire department, an IV practice arm.
Okay, that IV practice arm was purchased to train our new EMTs to be IV certified within our department. Every EMT is now taking a step to be certified in IV training. We have one of our guys in our department that's a certified instructor, and he needed that arm to train the individuals at the department.
Okay, and that's what I was thinking it was, a practice arm, but that's not what it says, so I was just wondering if that was a typo or if it was something different.
Okay.
Because it says partis arm, not practice, so that's what I was, that was my question to Carrie was, is it a typo or is it something different, because I didn't know.
It's probably just IV practice arm. Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Chief.
That's what I thought, okay. Thank you, and then, on page seven, on the bottom, again, it's fire replacement expense for Western Technologies, and then it's GPR, and it's $1,548.50.
I think that's part of the engineering study.
Yeah, we are probably going to rename this account to just say a fire expense, or, you know, because we kind of lumped everything that had to do with a fire under fire replacement expense, but some of them are more like a cost of the fire and not things we're replacing. So this was for City Hall, non-destructive testing is what the invoice said.
Okay. I guess it was my question is how do we qualify, you know? I would assume that it's things that need to be replaced, but there have been so many things lumped under fire replacement that I was just wondering how
we're going about
distinguishing what is and what isn't.
We're going to work on separating that and coming up with a separate account code for the fire expense versus replacement expense.
Okay, so, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right, and there'll be another one next month because they've come back for a different test.
Okay.
So you'll see Western Technologies next month too.
Okay. Thank you.
That it? Anything else? Okay, we have a motion, we have a second. Those in favor of the accounts payable, it's been so long here, signify by stating aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Hearing none, motion carried unanimously. We go to approval of the consent agenda, items A through G. Item A. Approval of the minutes of the regular session of Mayor and Council held on February 20th, 2018 at 7 p.m. B, approval of the minutes of the work session of Mayor and Council held on March 6, 2018 at 5:01 p.m. C, approval of the appointment of Joseph Linden to the Police and Fire Advisory Committee. D, approval of a park facility and right-of-way use permit for Bisbee Unified School District to use Tombstone Canyon, starting at the Iron Man down to City Park for a community walk to support National School Walkout 20th anniversary of the Columbine shooting on Friday, April 20th, 2018, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. with a request for waiver of fees. E, approval of a park facility and right-of-way use permit for Bisbee Vogue, Inc. for the use of various city streets, parking spaces, and staircases for the Bisbee 1000 stair climb on October 20th, 2018 from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. This includes time for setup and breakdown. F, approval of a park and facility and right-of-way use permit for Bisbee Vogue, Inc. for the use of City Park for the Bisbee 1000 stair climb on Saturday, October 20th, 2018 from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. G, approval of a special event liquor license application submitted by the Community Synergy Solutions Corporation for an event to be held at Club Kilimanjaro, 33 Subway Street, Bisbee, on Saturday, April 28, 2018, from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m., Serena Sullivan, applicant. Council, do you wish any of these pulled for further discussion?
Yes, I would like to pull E and F for further discussion.
Items E and F are pulled for further discussion. And do we have a motion on the remaining items?
I move that we approve the consent agenda items A through D and G.
Thank you. Do we have a second? Thank you. All those in favor of approving the consent agenda items A through D and item G, signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Hearing none, motion carried unanimously. Items E and F. Are you representing Vogue tonight? Well, why don't you come on up, sir?
Mayor Smith, I have a question.
No, you don't get to ask questions right now.
Hi, Ken Budge.
No. No. When your time comes, you're down here, but not yet.
Ken Budge, Board of Directors, Vogue.
Ken, I have a question about a concern about closing Falling Hill from 5 a.m. to 4 p.m. See, we're listed there in both E and F doing that. It's already closed from 5 a.m. to 12 p.m., and I understand that. That's when the race is in. But to close it all the rest of the day, that's really going to mess with people going up, trying to get to their homes up in Falling Hill.
They will be able to go to the left and go up and around that way once, you know, we pull off of Pearl, that becomes back to a one-way street. It's just because we've decided to move the Beer Fest, we don't want to have any conflict, so we're going to put that at St. Pat's this year. So that's the reason.
So where would they go?
Well, they would go up on the left side of the courthouse and around and up and over that way if they needed to go.
Around the back?
Yeah. A little inconvenience for another 4 hours, I realize. Long as they can get there. I mean, that's our big thing. Yeah, I wouldn't want to keep them out any longer than necessary, but there is a way. It just have to be a little longer course. Another one? Anything else?
That's big enough for the public safety apparatus, right?
Sure, yeah. You would go up around the Women's Club and come around and by the pool and come down.
You have to go up around the
Women's Club, yeah.
I mean, it's just right there in that parking lot, right, at the church where the Beer Fest is going to be?
Right. It's going to be inside the fenced area.
Right.
Everything is trying to be downsized this year. We're only doing 1,350 people instead of 15.
Yeah.
We're only going to use one park for just a few hours, just to clear that one area. That's the plan, is we're slowly trying to just, you know, make things simpler and easier.
Anything else? Okay. I just, since it's already off, when are you going to start putting out no parking signs?
Public Works Director Andy met with us. He's going to do all the signing himself. We're not going to be involved in that this year. He said he wanted to do it in order so there wouldn't be a back and forth or a problem, and we agreed to that at the IFP that we just had a few days ago.
Oh, okay.
So it would be Andy's.
Okay.
And he wrote the times down, when he was going to do it, and so on.
Okay. So any complaints go to him?
That's what he wanted.
Sure. Okay, excellent. All right. Any questions, Council?
No.
Mr. Hanson, I have a question. The parking lot at the courthouse is county.
Well, there's quite a few parking lots at the courthouse.
Well,
you're talking about the right below the fountain?
Yes.
Okay, yes. And every year they get a use permit from the county to
okay.
use that.
That's what I wanted to make sure that we weren't giving a get out of jail free card on county property. That's all. Good. Good, good. All right. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve consent agenda items E and F.
Thank you, Mr. Budge. I'll second that. So all those in favor of approving consent item E and F, signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carried unanimously. Moving on to new business, item number 3. Discussion and possible approval of resolution R1806 in support of an application to the U.S. Department of Agriculture for no more than $80,000 for a portion of the design phase funds in support of the Science and Exploration and Research Center. Ms. Melanie Green.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's good to be here again. It's been a year since we got our first USDA application in for this project. And I just want to tell you briefly, we're at the 50% mark on getting that job done. Gallagher and Associates will be here this week to make presentations at private meetings on Thursday, one for their work they're doing with Freeport, one in the afternoon with the work for the Bisbee, the city and their partners. And then in the evening on Thursday at 5:30 at the Royale, they'll be making a public presentation on their preliminary findings and where they're at this 50% complete mark, and then asking the public for a response and comments on their preliminary findings. So that's been a big success. We're right on track in spending the money and in meeting our match commitment for that. The new application, I received a call from USDA Representative Don Irby reminding me that this next cycle had begun and that we were encouraged to apply. I don't know that his encouragement meant that we stood any better chance than we ever do to get it, but they liked our project enough to bring it to our attention. So where we are now is the feasibility study is being completed. The preliminary findings are showing a very favorable outcome for a science center, the design of which would have to be done in this next phase, which is called the design phase. So what this USDA application is hoping to accomplish, the design phase is a much bigger, more detailed phase of planning, where you actually decide what kinds of sciences you're wanting to promote, the exploration of, what kinds of other programs you might want to have in this science center. And then how are you going to do all this, and then just most importantly, how are you going to fund all of this? The notion is that a private nonprofit would be established, so this is not a science center that the city would own. It's not a science center that Freeport would own. It's a science center that would be owned by a nonprofit organization. Given that, and given that USDA money only comes around once a year, what we've decided to ask, or what we want approval to ask for, is a community engagement element of the design phase. There'll be a lot of community engagement needed in that phase. And the way we want to do that is, instead of having meeting after meeting where people who have children are just getting off work, where it's difficult to continue to come to community meetings, is to have an open forum available for the public to come to between hours that are established in the community's best interest. And the where we'd like to do that is in a storefront on Main Street in Old Bisbee. In that storefront, we would do basically three things. One, for the interim time that it takes to actually develop a science center, we'd have what we're calling a micro science center, a demonstration of how science centers work. We would have exhibits in this storefront that are lent to us from other established science programs at UA, ASU, Biosphere perhaps, and any number of others. Those exhibits would rotate and provide a way for teachers to look for curriculum. We would like to provide curriculum that goes with those demonstration projects. So that would be the first use of this. The second is for actual community engagement in the design phase. So as concepts are developed for a science center, they would be tested with the public. The public can come through, whether it's residents or tourists. What do you think of this idea? Or how would you like to see such and such? What kinds of science are important to you? So each part of the design phase gets presented in the storefront for the public then to respond to. And that gives us the feedback then to make sure that our design is community oriented. That's the second effort. The third is to provide a retail opportunity, one, to help support this storefront, but to also give the public an opportunity to purchase science-based kits, educational materials, a place where teachers could come and get curriculum that they could use in the classroom, and just plain old fun science-type gifts. And that way, the retail sales that are made go to continue supporting this Main Street storefront. The notion is that when the Science Center is built and there's a ribbon cutting, the Main Street store closes. It's that placeholder to keep people interested and motivated. So for this application, what we're looking for is actual cash from USDA to support the lease of such a storefront, its utilities, exhibits on a rotating basis, volunteer support and training, public engagement events, supplies, furnishings, and insurance. Those things we would actually ask for cash from USDA to pay for those items. On the other side of the column are in-kind contributions. USDA doesn't require match money, but you get points, significant points, if you can leverage their money. So we're looking for our other partners, RAIN, which is the Rural Activation and Innovation Network, to help us with some in-kind or cash, and we have a commitment coming from them. And we also are looking at the exhibit developer, Etta Kralvec, who's a partner representing University of Arizona South, has been allowed to dedicate 20% of her time on this project. So we're counting the value of that time. And then there's my time that since this project started, I haven't charged for the work except for the initial application. So everything I've been doing, we've been tracking. This year, the work I'm doing goes to meeting the city's $9,000 cash or in-kind commitment. Since I'm volunteering, we count it as volunteer in-kind. And then for this future application, my time will be counted in that way as well. So what we're asking for from the USDA is $49,900. $50,000 is their average grant amount. We're hoping to match that with 70%. So theirs would represent the 30%, the matching funds, including my time, Edda's, and the others I described, would equal roughly 70%. If we're unable to confirm and have everything ready for commitment for that match, then we would lower our match amount. It's not a requirement. We would just know that we would get less points. With all that said, the match that's currently indicated at 66% is $95,800. That does include, and this, and I'm going to ask for a change in the resolution based on this, I need to show that the city itself is investing in this process. But it does not have to be cash. And similar to last year, what I want to do is utilize the administrative cost in this grant. Finance, Carrie's office, writes the checks, oversees the balances, make sure that we have everything in order. The time that her staff puts in that can be counted as that match. In addition, I would like to add the visitor center, Jen Loria's city time, about $2,500 worth of her city time to help us in the marketing of this with her normal marketing efforts. In speaking to her, she agreed that she'd be interested, and of course with council approval and city manager's direction, she would be willing to do that. So with that said,
what would the corrected amount be?
No, that amount included those, okay, those figures. On the resolution that you have, in item number 3 under the now therefore, when I originally wrote this, I assumed that we would not be asking the city for any indication of match, and then in reading the USDA guide, understood that having a real investment by the city is going to be important for the reviewers. So where it says agrees to accept support services valued at up to $40,000, I would like it to read agrees to accept / provide. It's because that provision comes through the finance department and possibly the visitors bureau. Services valued up to, and then I need to change the $40,000 to be inclusive of all of the match now that I'm pulling together, which currently is $95,800. So whether you want to say $95,800, I would like to say up to, rather than a figure, I would like to say up to 70% of the project cost. And that allowed, 70% is the maximum points we can get,
okay,
for a leverage. Britt, I told you, we talked with Ashley and I checked in with Britt. I got his approval for the accept provide. Britt, I neglected to change the dollar figures unless you have a concern.
No, that's okay. That's fine as well. Just when you make the motion to approve the resolution, just motion to approve the resolution with the changes recommended by Ms. Green.
Any questions?
Yeah. Questions, Council? Ms. Klein?
Well, I did have a question, but you kind of answered it on the retail sales that will be used to support, and that's what I was wondering. If we did get the funding, would that be used to support the storefront, or how would we continue providing for that? But you did answer it by saying the retail sales. But what if there isn't enough of the retail sales?
Right. What I'd like to do is, because this grant is a one-year grant that would pay, say, the rent and utilities plus these other items, what I would like to do is to save any retail sales for that entire first year towards, so that we could use that combined income then to carry on the second year and do the same. If it doesn't support itself, then we'll have to find other sources to go into the second year. But this first year would be supported by the grant.
So are you thinking in terms of Plan B? Should Plan A not work out?
Oh, absolutely. And the difficulty right now is the 501c3 that could eventually own this Science Center endeavor has not been formed yet. And the difficulty I have is finding grants that governments can apply for.
Right.
501c3s are much, much easier. Governments aren't always eligible as applicants for a lot of the funding that would support that. Now, by the second year, I would expect that we would have that. If we don't get the funding from USDA this year, then we definitely have to go to a completely different Plan B, which is try to fund the entire design phase, including the storefront.
And do we have a storefront identified?
No, and it's too premature because this grant won't be awarded until October 1st. And as you know, the downtown cycle of vacancies, we don't feel we'd be successful in asking the owner of a vacant store now to hold it for us till April or till October without any guarantee that we'd be able to take it. So what we're hoping, our schedule for USDA shows that we would actually occupy by January. So we would have October, November. We could go in earlier. We could go in as early as we could get in, but the plan is to be in by January. I would like to see us in by December 1st so that we could take advantage of the Christmas season.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then do we have a, for the Exploration and Research Center, do we have, for the permanent mm-hmm. one, do we have that identified, the location?
Yeah. No, that will come about as recommendations from this feasibility study. But what we know will happen, they will have recommendations on sites that are appropriate and probably best utilized at this early phase. What we'll also do is, during the design phase, we'll look at the kind of programming that we want to do, and then we'll have to know that if any of these recommended sites fit for the kinds of programming we want, that will narrow the scope. It may be that there's only one or two possibilities at that point, but the final decision on location will have to be made once you know what it is you want to provide. Some sites may be appropriate, others may not. They've looked at a lot of different things around the entire community, including the Alco building in San Jose. They've looked at space in Warren, though I can't say exactly what space that was, but I know they're looking at the old City Hall site as potential, you know, in depending on what the city decides to do with it. They've looked at the old high school in Old Bisbee. I think in their report you'll see probably maybe 10 or 12 sites that they've reviewed.
Anything else? Do we have a motion?
I think if you just said with the changes recommended by Ms. Green.
With the changes recommended by Ms. Green for a course of design phase of planning for the Science Exploration and Research Center.
Second. Second. We have a motion. We have a second. Ms. Coronado.
Councilmember Klein.
Aye.
Councilmember Davis.
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins.
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Dunn.
Aye.
Councilmember Lindstrom.
Aye.
Mayor Smith?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Ms. Green, for...
Hope to see you all Thursday, 5:30 at the Royale.
Oh, yes. Thanks for all your hard work on our behalf. Item number 4, discussion and possible approval of the creation of position and job description for customer service manager. We have Joni Giacomino signed up.
I just have a question. Since you're going through budget and budget cuts, why are you developing a new position that you're going to end up having to budget for in the new budget and come up with money for when this position could be easily covered under your city manager? Is there a specific reason that it's being developed? Again, you're asking for all the other departments to make cuts in large quantities, and now you're wanting to develop something. That's just my question. But I did also want to say, before I go, which has nothing to do with this, that I agree with Gabe on the shopping local. You guys outsourced IT. You talk about shopping local, yet why don't you put an ad in the paper that says, oh, we're going to have a meeting. Anybody in Bisbee that's interested in being a vendor and putting on the vendor list, come meet and see what you have to do. It's not that hard.
Mr. Smith.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Before you, you have a job description for customer service manager, and there's an initiative report, and I apologize for the length, but the concepts behind this approach are fairly involved. We just had a fairly meaty study session with iBisbee, which after a significant amount of work, that group of folks have identified that there's a significant disconnect between the city and the community. In that study session, Canberra Landing also identified that consistency and customer service were problems here in Bisbee. And I would say that the administration of the city's local government is no exception to that statement. We do have problems with communications, consistency, and customer service. The proposal, there's an executive summary up front that in one page pretty much covers the purposes for this position. Currently, complaints are not managed or tracked through the administration. They are received by anyone and pretty much administered by anyone. The data from those complaints is not captured. We are not learning from our shortcomings, at least not in an identified way. The communications with the public related to their complaints is not consistent. We do not get back in touch with people on a regular basis to let them know that their complaint has been resolved or to ask them if there's additional feedback that needs to be considered to resolve their complaint to their expectations. There is not a consistent experience. Our community, when they come to us with a complaint, when they come to us with a request for help, there is no consistent experience that they receive, and we are not managing to create that. So the approach is to create a job description that focuses on just those things to make a difference and begin to document and prove that difference. I believe there's also an opportunity once we begin pursuing this effort to, in an organized fashion, involve volunteers to assist us with it. Those volunteers can also help the departments with interdepartmental work when we identify appropriate skill sets. I think police comes to mind, where we are using existing volunteers to help with some administrative tasks. There are others that we could deploy. There, I believe, is an ability for us to respond and use data in a better way. And I believe that there is a way for us to add value to our customer service when our customers come to us. Generally, when we have a customer come to the city for the creation of a new utility account, that usually means they're new to town. We are not providing them with standard information that would be helpful for them to get going in our community. Information about where all the doctor's offices are, where to shop, where you can go and take your kids to school. There are things that we could be providing access to that we're not. So the purpose of the requested action is to define a position that we can task a person with taking these things on and improving our relationship with our customers. We will not be creating an additional person on the payroll for this. We have enough bandwidth within our current payroll to manage this. It's my understanding between what we have in finance and what was freed up in HR, we have the ability to fund this. It's not money that we're asking for this evening. I cannot hire a person and have them do a specific set of duties without council approving the description first. And so what we're asking is for council to create the job description so that we can assign a person and get to work. We currently have a person who is in a temporary position performing some of these tasks, but not per the level of performance you see in the job description before you.
So just to make it clear for everybody, you're asking for us to approve a job description, but this doesn't provide you an avenue to hire anybody yet.
There's no association of money with my request.
Correct. And actually, this is actually something you'd be proposing within the new budget?
Yes, sir. I do have funds in hand right now to hire a person to do this within my standing budget. It's my understanding between finance and the other funds that we have the ability to put somebody to work doing this right now. We just don't have a description and a job position to assign somebody specifically this set of tasks. I think Carrie could provide some additional information on funding for the position if that would be helpful.
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Backley.
Sure. Currently, finance has three quarters of a position. One quarter of that is funding HR because that was when our HR person was also doing payroll. So technically we have three quarters of a position to a half-time position. I'm not saying that right. So we have a half-time position that we haven't filled, and then the quarter of a position that's funding HR. So if that quarter came back to finance, then we would have three quarters of a person. So it's not exactly a full time.
I'm sorry, yeah. I'm vague. How are we funding HR then?
We're currently funding HR out of the 70% that was assigned when we had a prior director.
Mm-hmm. And the other quarter comes from finance.
Mm-hmm. Right. But so that's what I'm saying. If you're going to give that quarter away, then... Mm-hmm. Then,
oh, I
that
see.
Won't
you're
be going
thinking,
to HR.
You're thinking 40 hours a week. I'm thinking more than 19 and a half. I want to take everything that I can and put it on this and get it started. And then in the new budget, if I can go to 40 hours a week, I will.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a big difference. Okay. So you're saying that in the budget right now, you have 19 and a half hours a week.
I have more than that.
Okay, but...
And once I get past 19 and a half, it's with benefits.
Right. So your proposal is we pass this. Does this have to go to civil service now?
I think it has to be reviewed. That's been the tradition. I don't know that it's required by the code, but that has been the tradition.
See, I'm actually used to doing it, having been on civil service, I'm actually used to it going to civil service and them approving it and then bringing it with their approval to the council. And so that's why I was asking procedurally if we were...
We don't have a quorum on civil service right now either. We have two members.
Okay. So that's kind of a moot point then. Okay. And so then I think I'm asking questions that we want to...
Yeah. Go right ahead.
Yeah. So with this approval, it creates a position that you say is funded, and that you would be proposing in the fairly near future putting somebody into that position at 19 and up to 19 and a half hours a week?
No, sir. I would be seeking to go past 19 and a half hours a week with whatever funding I have available within the budget.
In this year's budget?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm sort of at a loss. Ms. Klein, you said you wanted to.
Several questions here, but under the summary, it says that under limited supervision provides administrative and secretarial support to the department director, conducts independent research on a variety of topics, assists with managing projects, and acts as liaison to the public. Okay, what department director?
This person will be serving in finance and will be doing more than just customer service.
Okay, and then as we go down the list of what this all entails, you know, participates in the resolution of citizen complaints and complex issues, often overlapping multitude departments. I see that as city manager duties. The next one is coordinates and participates in the implementation and management of software, including assignment tasks to the departments. Well, to me, that would be the department head duties.
If we can back up one, the complaint resolution. There needs to be a consistent reception of complaints, and there needs to be consistent escalation of complaints that can't be resolved at the window. And currently, we do not have that. Currently, the people who are handling that have not had training, and they don't have the skill set. Yes, eventually, if resolution can't be successfully created at the window, it would be escalated to either the department head or me. But there has to be a person at the window who has the capacity to attempt to resolve the complaint.
Okay, what window are we talking about?
The utilities window. I believe it's to the left of the lobby there.
Okay, building F.
G.
We're in G.
Okay, so, but generally, if there's a complaint, and it doesn't matter what department it is, it would generally go to the department head. And then, if it's not resolved, it goes to the city manager. If it's not resolved there, then it goes to, well, I guess we don't have a civil service, but it would then eventually come to mayor and council.
A good number of the complaints we receive are resolved at the window. And we need to be able to do that in a way that the customer feels like their service has been a positive one. And yes, I agree, they need to be escalated through the departmental director and the city manager.
Okay, and then, okay, so we covered the coordinates the efforts and responses of various department heads, divisions, and applicants across complex program, process, or software deployments, as well as service processes that customers, you know, are facing, whatever. Again, I see that as CM duties, and...
Well, if we could stop right there. There are process improvements and the deployment of software that I wouldn't necessarily be heading up within each of the departments. There may, however, be expertise within either the customer service manager or the volunteers that the customer service manager brings on board that would help departments deploy software. Let's say at the garage, if they wanted to deploy shop software that tracked the units that they were repairing and the repair costs and the time involved, you wouldn't look to the mechanics to deploy that software, and you wouldn't look to the director of public works to deploy that software if you had a technically capable person who could help deploy that within that department. And so the customer service person could provide customer service support to the citizens of Bisbee, as well as the departments that work within the administration.
Well, before, when we had software deployments, or software issues, whatever you want to call it, we did have our local IT company that did that, and we no longer have that service. And then provide administrative support to departments, including assistance during high demand seasons or time frames. And who determines that, and how is it determined?
Well, currently, we're very used to, as an administration, sharing resources. Ever since the recession and the cutbacks in staffing and funding, the departments have all had to lean on each other. It is fairly frequent that the departments at the leadership meetings, which occur twice a month, speak about additional project load and the need for help. I think in particular, Public Works flexes people across departments quite a bit. I do believe that if you had a person who was trained and good at providing customer service, they could teach that perspective and those practices to other departments while they're helping to fill in on some of the administrative tasks. And hopefully the focus on customer service and the experience our customers have would improve.
Okay, and then we go down to develop standard operating procedures, SOPs for customer service throughout the organizations, and, you know, provides training. Again, our SOPs should come from the city manager.
Actually, if we can address that, generally the SOPs are created by the front line because they're the ones doing the work. And with the oversight from their management or their departmental director, they create the granular information that makes up the SOPs. The city manager does not sit down and write them.
Okay. And then manages, you know, the volunteer corps to include recruitment, onboarding, and deployment of volunteers. I would see that as personnel director duties or the personnel department.
The personnel would be very heavily involved in that. They would actually be the gatekeeper of that information. You're correct. The practices that we generally use for onboarding employees would be very similar to what we would use for onboarding volunteers.
Might I interrupt just a second?
Sure.
I think that there's enough questions that this bears further education for all of us. And so I would move that we table this till the next meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to table. All those in favor, signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
Nay.
Okay. Motion passes 5-1. Mr. Smith, let you and I get together and figure out the best time to, and the best way to present this to council so that we're not going to be charging through a meeting doing it.
Yes, sir.
Item number five, discussion of possible approval of notice of intent to adopt ordinance O-1808, amending the animal code portion of the city code, Article 6, and adding a feral cat colony caregiver program. We have Mr. Staley signed up. Mr. Staley, you have your 3 minutes, sir.
I'm not sure I can do it in 3 minutes.
Well, we're going to need to. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for hearing me tonight. And the first two items on the record, or I've given you a packet that has some things listed on it. And the first two items are the records requests that have not been fulfilled.
And as you know, record requests are the soul of any business, whether it is government business or private records. And that's how you show you're legitimate, honest, and abide by the law. And in the case of nonprofit organizations, it is imperative that these proper records are correct and available. And that is not the case tonight. The Bisbee Animal Shelter has failed this test, and that reflects on all of us as citizens. These requirements and laws are not being followed either by statute or contract with the city. I feel that contracting this service to a nonprofit business and then including it in the city agreement, including in the city agreement the ability to keep impound fees, spay and neuter fees, and then letting that business loose on our neighborhoods is a colossal mistake, as has been borne out by the disaster caused in Old Bisbee by the Bisbee Animal Shelter. The shelter should be run by city employees using needy college students, needy mothers, etc., managed by two managers who actually work there every day without the thought of huge profits. Stop this insane money grab that's ruining our neighborhoods. How can you not stop it? Due to the inability of the shelter to abide by ethical or legal standards, it should not be on the city payroll or allowed to handle any animals. The ordinance that we're speaking about tonight obviously should not be approved until these issues are resolved by an independent investigation. As for the caregiver idea, it's a good one, but only if the ability to make large sums of money is taken out of the equation, and it is done on a private individual basis. Included in your packet tonight is documentation of the animals I have personally spayed since we last spoke, and I'm volunteering to continue this practice as a caretaker of my neighborhood. I guess the question here is, are we going to allow a contractor to continue to break the law and not abide by the city contract and make huge sums of money ruining our neighborhoods? There's got to be a solution here. And I think that the caregiver idea is a good one, but it has to be, the money situation has got to be taken out of it. It's ruining our neighborhoods. And that's all I got to say, other than I will continue.
Thank you, sir.
To pursue this on any avenue that I can.
All right, time's up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Council, any comments, questions regarding the ordinance? Yes, I do need to let you know that in the future, you do have to sign. Okay. That's Ms. Schmidt.
Yep, my name is Jennifer Schmidt. Hi again. So I just happened to be here by default, and I came up to speak because I used to live on that street for 2.5 years. And so my experience living there is health of the cats is not good. I've witnessed newborn kittens dying right next to my house for 2.5 years, hearing them cry and fight. There's 40 or 50 just right there. The smell of the urine, the health of the cats is not okay. And I've been trained, I've worked at vet clinics. I know what I see. So I'm just sharing my experience. So
thank you, ma'am.
Whatever we can do to help this feral cat situation and have them taken care of, and I
great.
Think that's great. Thank you.
Thank you for your input.
Mr. Mayor, since I'm listed
yes.
as the, okay, right
yes.
here.
And I, and
as a presenter on this, yeah, we had a work session just a few weeks ago on this. So I don't think I need to go into huge amounts of detail, but in looking at the animal code, it's way, way out of date. It's gotten completely, in many aspects, deviated from what's required by state statute. It's deviated from what's actually the actual practice on the ground. by Animal Control and the animal shelter. And for that reason, it was necessary to put it into, just start to conform it to actual law and actual practice on the ground. There were also just some changes in terminology over the years. So I think pretty much all the changes to most of the animal code, putting aside the feral cats, is really kind of ministerial in nature. It's not changing what needs to be done or is being done. The feral cat colony ordinance that's being presented as part of the change in the animal code, I described that to you a few weeks ago at the work session. It really provides an outline and gives some authority to start dealing with the feral cat populations in the city. Obviously, it's going to take more than just writing an ordinance to make it work. It's going to take some dedicated people to fulfilling it. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Are there any?
I move to approve ordinance 0-18-08, amending the animal code portion of the city code, Article 6, and adding the feral cat colony caregiver program.
I'll second that.
We have a motion. We have a second. Ms. Coronado?
Councilmember Klein?
Aye.
Councilmember Davis?
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Lindstrom?
Aye.
Mayor Smith?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously.
Mayor, I just want to make an amusing comment, I guess.
Amusing?
Well, it could be amusing.
Okay.
I think the fact that with the cooperation of the friends of the animal shelter, the physical impact is none.
Right.
And certainly, I want to acknowledge this really cool sweater that I bought.
It is.
Ralph Lauren, that I bought for $4 at the Guinea Shelter store. And this is how we're financing this program.
Absolutely.
Others to do the same.
Yes, give me shelter on Main Street. Thank you.
Yes,
thank you, sir.
Good.
I neglected my duty on that. So we're moving to Mr. Smith. Do you have any reports tonight?
No report, Mayor.
All right, sir. Mr. Higgins.
I move that we adjourn.
We have a motion. We have a second to adjourn. All those in favor signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion carried unanimously. Thank you, Council.